The Harvest Message.
My part in this symposium is entitled Harvest Message. The word harvest, or the thought of a harvest as it pertains to the end of this age, was given to us by Jesus in one of his parables. Parable you know well. Parable of the wheat and the tares. And it was said in that parable, in verse 30, I will say to the reapers, gather ye together first the tares and bind them in bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat into my barn. In the explanation of this, in verses 40, 41, 42, and 43, he explains who the tares are and the burning process of them. He says, therefore, the tares are gathered and burned in the fire. So shall it be in the end of this age. The Son of Man shall send forth his angels. He has agencies that do this work for him. Shall send forth his angels, and they shall gather out of his kingdom all things that offend, and them which do iniquity, and shall cast them into a furnace of fire, and there shall be wailing and gnashing of teeth. Now we notice he says he's going to gather them out of his kingdom. And we say, well, his kingdom isn't here. But in the sense of this parable, it is. This was a parable of the kingdom of heaven. And in the sense of this parable, the kingdom of heaven began way back there when Jesus began to preach, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. And it's a parable which deals with the development of that which our dear brother Krupa has just been telling us about. Those who will share in the spiritual phase of that kingdom. And that work began in the early days of the gospel age and progresses until its end. And its end, Jesus says, will accomplish a harvest work. The harvest is the end of the age, so this parable tells us. And he says that he will have agencies that will accomplish this work. In this parable, we oftentimes concentrate on the part of the parable which deals with the gathering of the wheat. And he says that he'd send forth reapers to do this work. But a big part of the parable deals with the destruction of those that claim to be the kingdom of Christ and were not. And so we are faced with the dilemma, as it were, of the reapers harvesting themselves. And so we have to perhaps reason a little further as to what these symbols mean, to who the angels are that accomplish this work. Now, the word doesn't necessarily refer to holy angels, although holy angels certainly are messengers of God. But the word generally refers to those, to messengers or agencies which God uses to accomplish his work. And certainly as far as the destruction of the tares are concerned, and we know who they are and what they who they represent in the world, we have no part in the physical destruction of Christendom. The Bible is quite informative as to the agencies that God will use for this work. He tells us in the book of Revelation about three woes that will come upon Christendom, which will bring about their destruction. The first of these, and it's very highly symbolic language, but the first of these seems well to describe conditions that the Lord has caused to come about at the end of this age. In the civil aspects of this present evil world, a change which takes place which had a great impact upon Christendom. We call it the social revolution, the rise of socialism on the world scene, and especially communism on the world scene, has had a great effect in the outward destruction of the power and the authority of Christendom. The second woe that is described there seems to be an outgrowth of the first woe, seems to be a change that takes place internally within the structure of the ecclesiastical world itself. Because of the great threat of perhaps even complete destruction from the philosophy of socialism and communism, that they've completely changed their outlook as far as what their purpose in the world is. And instead of being organization which is attempting to convert the world through missionary efforts to convert the world to Christ and set up Christ's kingdom on the earth, they are reduced to the status of for self-preservation because of this great onslaught of this threat from without, of attaching themselves in a political way to those powers and those countries, those governments in the world that will support them, that will still champion their cause. And they have very little time left for missionary effort. Ecumenicism has entered into this picture, and ecumenicism, as a result of this theory which has been applied to the unification of all of Christendom, has in essence brought down the power of the hierarchy to the level of the people. And thus it is that the picture in Revelation has been greatly fulfilled, that Christendom as a great millstone would be brought down into the sea. And the third woe is tied in with the final destruction of Christendom, which is in Armageddon itself, and the setting up of the kingdom of Christ which follows. And so it is that the Lord has brought about agencies other than his people to do this work. But it's interesting, and perhaps we should take what he said to Jeremiah as a case in point to show that the Lord counts us in as having a part of this because we're telling the world all about it, because we're telling the world that Christendom is going to be destroyed and replaced by Christ's kingdom. Jeremiah was commissioned to speak God's judgments to Israel. He didn't do anything towards actually bringing about the punishments and the judgments upon them, but he was commissioned to speak of them. And the Lord told Jeremiah that because he was, and he was faithful in doing that, that the Lord counted him as actually having accomplished it, having a hand in its accomplishment. It says, "Then the Lord put forth his hand and touched my mouth, and the Lord said unto me, Behold, I have put my words in thy mouth. See, I have this day set thee over the nations and over the kingdoms to root them out, to pull them down, to destroy and to throw down and to build and to plant." In a similar way, at the end of this age, the Lord has provided a message. He said in this parable, he says, "Say unto the angels," or unto the reapers, and that's a voice that goes forth. We have the privilege of saying and the privilege of telling the world that God's judgments are upon them. But there's a more important work going on in the harvest. This was obviously a part of this parable, but a more important work is going on, and it's mentioned to us in its proper relationship to this destructive feature of the harvest in the 7th chapter of Revelation. And there we have the picture of the four winds which are involved in the destruction of Christendom, some of the agencies involved in that destruction, as being held back until a greater work was accomplished, was finished, and that was the sealing of the saints in their forehead. And that part of the parable relates to the wheat being gathered into a barn. And in this parable, he equates the barn and the barn condition to the expression in the explanation of the parable that reads like this in the 43rd verse. Then shall the righteous shine forth as the sun in the kingdom of their Father. Now we notice here he doesn't say in the kingdom of Christ. He's still talking about the kingdom of heaven that he was referring to as encompassing the gospel age and the development phase of that kingdom. That's all part of the kingdom of the Father. And he's saying here that while the elements that had no part in that kingdom were being destroyed, that those, the true wheat, those that the Lord had planted for the very purpose of being a part of his kingdom, that they were being harvested. And it's an interesting expression here, that they'll shine forth as the sun. It seems to have the thought of glorification, of having received a position and a status of glory. And so we believe that the barn condition is a condition of the resurrection. And that's what they're being gathered to. Before the saints can ever rule with Christ, they must be resurrected. They cannot reign on earth on this side of the veil. They certainly cannot reign in the grave. They must be resurrected. And so the harvest was for the purpose of the resurrection of the saints. As one of our earlier speakers pointed out, this work began early in the harvest. We would expect that if it's a work that relates to the harvest, that it would continue through the harvest. The same as the destructive work continues through the entire harvest period. And so it is that the harvest was designed especially to accomplish this work. There's a reference to that in the 18th chapter of Revelation. And it reads like this. He says, I heard another voice. There was a voice in heaven that told about and revealed the fact that which purported itself to be the kingdom of Christ was not. And it was revealed for what it truly was. And then he heard another voice, the voice of the harvest, saying, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not her of her plagues. For her sins have reached unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquity. Another voice in heaven. And I submit that this was the voice of the harvest. Come out of her, my people. Now, the Lord designed the harvest to accomplish that work. He brought upon the scene the agency to begin it, and that was Brother Russell. Brother Russell began by authoring the volumes, the 6 volumes of the Studies in the Scriptures. The first one that came out very early in the harvest covered these subjects. Earth's night of sin to terminate in a morning of joy. the existence of a supreme intelligent creator established. The Bible is a divine revelation viewed in the light of reason. Epochs and dispensations marked in the development of the plan of God. The mystery hidden from ages and from generations and now made manifest to his saints. Our Lord's return, its object, the restitution of all things. The permission of evil and its relationship to the plan of God. The day of judgment. Ransom and restitution. Spiritual and human natures separate and distinct. The three ways, the broad way, the narrow way, the highway. Explanation of Christ representing the plan of the ages, of the chart representing the plan of the ages. The kingdoms of this world, the kingdoms of God, the day of Jehovah. Now, I submit that every one of these subjects would have been needless to have submitted and elucidated upon to those who already understood them. The first volume of the Studies in the Scriptures was written, and I think by the Lord's direction, for the purpose of reaching those who had no knowledge of the truth. And yet it says that it was for the purpose of calling out of Babylon his people. Those who were to be his people. The early message of the harvest work was a message which was new to the people that it reached. But the Lord knew who he wanted to reach, and so the message was prepared in such a way that it would interest them, that it would reach them. And it began with the very simplest elements of truth, beginning with even proving the existence of an intelligent creator and establishing the fact that the Bible itself was the Word of God. For those who were already knowledgeable with respect to the plan of God in some way or another, this book would not, while it would have been of interest to them, it wouldn't have been the means of calling them. All of the other volumes are adjuncts to the first volume. They are written in such a way that they add to in great detail, and in such a way that they are really complete as far as the harvest message and the harvest work is concerned. The fourth volume deals with God's indictment and his judgment and his final sentencing and what the outcome will be in his glorious kingdom of the destruction of those of the false kingdom of Christ on earth. The fifth and sixth volumes deal in great detail with the various doctrines of the truth, especially the fifth volume. They were especially written for the harvesting of the wheat, while the other was especially designed and written to voice God's judgment upon Christendom. And so it is that the Lord had carefully prepared the tools with which the harvest work would be accomplished. And they were basically in the six volumes of the Studies of the Scriptures. Now, there have been other things written. Brother Woodworth wrote many booklets, simplified somewhat in their language, brought more up to date. But in just about every case, we find that they are tap-offs, if we can use that expression, from the subject matter of the six volumes of the Studies in the Scriptures. This was the tool that the Lord provided to accomplish the harvest work. One notable thing throughout the volumes is the fact that Brother Russell expected that the harvest would be over in 1914. He had reason to believe that. All the brethren, most of the brethren, in those days, in the early days of the harvest, prior to that time, believed it. It seemed reasonable. The time features of the harvest message as they were laid out by the brethren at that time in the second and third volumes of the Studies in the Scriptures all seemed to point to that. And yet it didn't happen. 1914 happened. The end of Gentile times happened. Some very interesting things happened in the world as a result of that, which involved important changes in the world, shaping the world to the final climax in Armageddon. And yet, because of that, why, it created a certain distortion in the projections that we find in the volumes. Naturally, those prophecies that deal with the time of the end and certainly deal with circumstances that were happening after that would not have been clear. They could not have been understood. Same as we don't fully understand all the detail of the prophecy concerning the future until it happens. So it was not clear. But because it was thought that it would all end, it was compacted into a harvest picture ending in 1914. Naturally, we have to make adjustments. Brother Russell started to make adjustments. Brother Russell expected that we would continue to make the proper adjustments in his projections in the volumes as time went on and reality dictated that these adjustments should be made. We should not be forced into trying to make every circumstance in the world fit into his concept of prophecy that we find in the volumes. That's a minor change. The volumes nevertheless fulfill their purpose of establishing for us a concept of truth which could call his people, complete the work of this gospel age, and call his people to a glorified position, condition within in the barn as it was represented in the parable. The harvest is still going grandly on. I like that expression that Brother Russell used when he found that 1914 did not fulfill his expectations. He says the harvest is going grandly on. He could have said, well, I guess the harvest is going on, but he didn't. He says it's going grandly on. It's been going grandly on ever since. The first volumes of the studies, or the volumes of the studies in the scriptures are still the key. Recently, 20,000 of them were printed. They won't last too long because people want them. The message to Christendom, notifying them of God's judgment coming upon them and identifying the things that are happening in the world as part of that judgment, is an important message today. Within the last 6 months, we have sent out over 100,000 requests, over 100,000 requests for Armageddon, then world peace. People are interested. This is part of the harvest message. Also, within that same period of time, we have sent out over 40,000 requests for what can a man believe? The work, both parts of the work of this harvest are still going grandly on.